This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to What the Pod!
Show has officially kind of sort of begun. Who cares? We'll do this Nerdist podcast. We'll just start talking. Amanda, thank you for joining me on this latest episode of What the Puck. Brandon's not here, so it's just me, Coach Dan, as he likes to call me, with special guest and a few times special guest now, and Facebook Liver, if that's a thing. Amanda, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Dan. I'm glad to be here, and you'll probably see my face as much on this podcast as you did on the Facebook Live event since I was out of the camera.
Well, you know what? We were in a very confined space for that sort of thing. I think the last time you were on, we had a little bit of a happier mood than at the moment regarding the Washington Capitals and what the hell has happened to this team. Amanda, as a occasional collaborator to the show and longtime Capitals fan and someone who's at game two. What the hell happened to the team?
Well, I'll tell you, when we were at game two, my seatmate Erica and I, as we were saying, it wasn't playoff hockey. It didn't get to be playoff hockey until period three. Up until that point, it was a boring game and it was just like any regular weekday game. They've been like, you know, grinding it out. We've lost playoff hockey somehow. I feel like it's just not up to the caliber that it needs to be for the playoffs.
I don't even know if it's up to where it should be for a regular season game.
No, but this is what I pointed out. I was talking with Erica, like I said, name dropping apparently. here's the thing. So for a team, the Capitals were obviously the best team in the league this year. However, coming into the playoffs, we were not playing as the best team in the league, whereas the Penguins were on an uptick. So the Penguins were on this really big uptick coming
in. Can we talk about this in the Facebook Live thing?
Maybe.
And people have been talking about this for a long time, and you, not to cut you off, I apologize, but you're 100% correct. The Penguins were one of the best teams the last couple months of the season, whereas the Capitals, what did we call this version of the Blizzard?
The
blizzard? No. Every year, Snowmageddon, was it Snowzilla this year?
No, I refer to it as Snowtorious B.I.G.
Okay, well, that was I think that's the unofficial name for it. I did like that one. But up until that point, the Capitals were easily the best team in the league, and then they had those breaks. It was like 9 days off, and then like the All-Star one game, and then the All-Star 5 days off, and then they just were like, what's this ice and round thing moving at me? Like, they don't know what to do anymore.
Right. But I think that here's the thing that I keep saying, and it's getting harder to say now that we're in a do or die moment, or situation.
Season dead. It's not that dramatic. Like, the players are hopefully not going to die.
No, but for us to continue, if we don't win the next game, we're out.
Yes, that would be how, when you're down 3-1, that's how that works.
Right. That's also how a do or die works.
No, but how did we get to this point?
I talk?
It's 3-1. What the hell happened?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Here's the thing. And it's getting harder to stand by this. But if you look at the games, for a team like the Penguins, who are supposedly doing phenomenally, that's that word.
That's close enough.
They're really not outplaying us. They really aren't. Like, when you look, yes, they've had some more shots than us in the first couple of games, but they weren't pretty shots. They weren't, like, totally dominating the game. And every game has been within, like, one goal. So we have the potential to beat them because they haven't been dominating. And if we were playing like we have been playing before Snowtorious B.I.G. or at any other point in time, this would not even be a contest. We would have swept. We would have swept. Swept isn't a word, but we would have swept the Flyers.
You can sweep the floor.
And we would have swept here. The problem is we're getting psyched out. I don't know, but we're not.
You think it's psychological?
I do. I think part of it is definitely psychological. I think the other problem is we have no traffic in front of the net. When you look, we are constantly shooting from outside. And I am shocked. Every time I hear Mike Milbury, Keith Jones, anybody, Doc, saying how great Ovechkin is playing. I do not think Ovechkin is playing Ovechkin hockey. He is hanging back. He is shooting from far out. You know, he's shooting from the blue line. And where's the traffic? Where's the hitting? Where's the, like, hustle? I don't see the hustle.
Ovechkin tends – he doesn't shoot as close. I think a lot of the times he's shooting from the outside now, unless he has the opportunity where he's getting in really close. But a lot of times he doesn't necessarily make as many moves when there's more players on defense. But I agree with you completely. They need to get more traffic in front. We saw both goals in game four were – both goals that the Caps scored were on Murray up high.
Right.
So why are they not taking more shots? There's a lot of shots down low, a lot right into his stomach. There's not a lot up at chest level at not saying to hit him in the head or in his stomach, but at head level.
But
that
the goal,
forced him to make a save with his glove.
There was a shot last night, and I can't remember. I think it was Oshie, that it was like if that was just 4 inches higher, that was a goal. It was like Murray was already like halfway down, and the shot went off, and I was like, that's beautiful. And he snatched it, but literally if it had been 4 inches higher, he would have missed it.
So do you think that having the desperation of keeping their season going on – which is the game is Saturday. Why is there suddenly 2 days off?
I don't know.
This is really ruining my ability to see Captain America Civil War on Saturday.
We can but wait, here's that. My other point. This is also the first series that it's been at 8 o'clock at night. I kind of wonder.
Yeah, it's really annoying, by the way.
It is really annoying. But I kind of wonder if that throws off some of the game day preparation. Now, they should be able to overcome that, but it's also an extra hour during the day. They're playing a little bit later.
No, we don't affect the Penguins the same
easy way.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that would affect this Penguins the same way. And if that is the problem, that's on the coaching staff and their inability to prepare these players correctly.
100%. But
I don't think that's the case.
No, I think I truly think, look, even in the last month of the season when we were not playing our best hockey, where we have become is a third period team. And the reason we are a third period team is because it is that, oh, crap, we're not winning. Let's come back and hustle, hustle, hustle. If we could put together a 60-minute hockey game where we were hustling the entire time, we wouldn't be having this conversation with this tone of voice.
Yeah, I got teacher Amanda for a second there.
I'm just saying.
No, but I mean, I think you make a point. So this team in the third period now of their season, are we going to see this team playing a 60 minutes like it's the third period because they're desperate for a win? Otherwise, their season's over.
Right. And here's the thing again. We have been, up until this point, up until this series, phenomenal on the power play. So clearly, Pittsburgh has studied our power play. And we have not been able to switch it up enough to get back playing well. We do not, again, it all comes down to when you watch our games, there is so much room in front of the net. There is no traffic in front of the net. And we used to have guys that were in front of the net.
Knubel.
Even Brooksy. Brooksy was often the one catching the rebound. Now I know he wasn't playing phenomenally.
He was too slow to get the rebounds though.
But he was there.
I think that's sort of the role they've had Chimera in, and Johansson's been there. Oshie's been there a little bit. The power play's been, I mean, the power play wasn't even that great in the Flyers series. I mean, it had one game where they lit them up, but then even then it was sort of struggling in that. And the power play, even at the end of the season, was struggling. I don't think it's just because teams have, I mean, this coaching staff is good enough that every team is going to adapt to what you're doing, and you make changes.
Obviously.
And you make changes, and then they have to adapt to that.
Right. But my point is we haven't adapted to them figuring us out. We are still trying the same power play moves. We're still doing all the passes. We're still making it look cute and trying
to
score from afar. Right. We're not just getting it in. Did you know that? We haven't just gotten
it in. Oh, the puck hasn't gone past the goaltender. No way. That's why they're losing.
Did you know that? I thought that might be a problem.
I think that's the biggest concern with this team is, yeah, the puck is not going behind the other goaltender more than it is going behind theirs.
Right. And there's only so much Holtby can do. And some of the – and you know, when you
No,
have
he's been
people...
hung out to dry. I mean, Schmidt hung him out in Game 3. And then Weber – and I'm not blaming Weber completely for Game 4. I mean, that pass – it was a nice pass to Hornquist. I mean, props to Weber for the play. That was – you know, if he was a Penguin, that would have been a very nice play on his part. However, the whole game cannot be come down to him, but defensively, they've had a lot of breakdowns.
They've had a lot of breakdowns, which is why Orlov was benched, which was, I thought was interesting that Orlov was benched, because I thought Schmidt was playing just as poorly that game. I mean, Schmidt was the one who ran into Orlov more so even than Orlov ran into Schmidt, but...
Well, Schmidt got benched last game.
Yes, well...
As did Eric Fehr. I didn't see that coming.
I know.
Why was Fehr benched? Whatever, screw that guy. He's with the Pens.
Yeah, and he scored the overtime goal, Okay, we don't want to talk about that. Look, we had an opportunity. Chris Letang.
Yeah.
Who should have gotten more than one game, but
I would have gone with two. His hit was not as bad as Orpik's. Orpik's was in, like, frames of film. Orpik's was certainly much later and probably significantly worse in terms of the way he went about it, but Letang deserved more than one game for that hit. And the both of them... The hits that were, Orpik's was definitely unnecessary, but Letang, the style that he went about it was completely unnecessary. He was looking for a big hit. He was looking to make a play. Sadie's upset. So,
sorry.
No, it's fine. My dog's been on the show before. It was clearly a situation where the NHL is, and this is, I'm glad you brought this up because I wanted to talk to you about this before and I forgot when I was writing my notes today, but the NHL is basing some of their suspensions on injuries. And do you think that is an okay thing to do? Do you think that's the way it should be done? Or should each situation be looked at as just the hit, not necessarily what happened to the player?
So here's the thing. The NHL has always done that because the difference between a 2-minute minor and a 4-minute major is their blood.
All right. Right? Fehr point. Fehr point.
So there's always been some level of, well, how much impact did the actual hit have before we call it? Which is, to me, not a way to run your disciplinary committee. Because, like, you have to look at repeat offenders, you have to look at intent, and you have to look at the entire, like, so what was the call? Like, yes, okay, it shouldn't matter if a person got hurt because of it, or if the person was just luckily enough not to get hurt.
Well, yeah, Kate, we were talking about this before and she's had her concussion issues and we were talking about how she and I were both playing in something along the lines of, we were both playing in a game. If she gets hit and I get hit, we both get hit in the head. She is much more likely to have a longer injury or a bigger injury than I am because I have yet to suffer, knock on wood, any form of concussion while playing.
Right, you're just this way naturally.
It's thanks for that. So for the NHL to make their basis of a suspension based on the injury to the player is BS because everybody's different. We all have different levels that our bodies can take certain things and certain hits. And so if Letang goes and hits – all right, let me rephrase. If Orpik goes and hits a guy like Tom Wilson, who I don't believe has had any concussion issues, or he goes and hits a guy like Ovechkin, the impact of that hit is going to be significantly less on a guy like a Burakovsky or Olli Maatta, who in Maatta's case has had concussion issues in the past. So he's more likely to suffer that injury again and again. So for Orpik to be suspended longer because Maatta was injured, and whereas Letang, if Letang had done the exact same thing but was not suspended as long, and in this case, while it wasn't the exact same, I think the similarities are enough. And as I understand, I didn't watch the videos, but as I understand it, the same terminology was used in both Orpik and the Letang suspension videos from the NHL's Player Safety Department, People, Association, whatever.
Shanahan.
No, it's not Shanny anymore. He's fixing things up in Toronto. I'll talk about that later.
I'm a little out of touch.
In that BS. I forget who the guy is now.
But wait,
I went off track. I forgot what I was saying.
I know you did. That's why I'm
But the point, I think the point is for them to be able to try and make an association between the injury and the suspension is bogus because everybody's different. So every case has to be taken on its own basis, which means that you're going to have just random days of suspensions based on injuries, whether they're the same or not.
But they've already proven that. That's been the inconsistency.
It's completely inconsistent.
Right. And that's what's been getting everybody very frustrated. Players, coaches, and fans alike is the inconsistency. So to me, I'm an assistant principal. Part of my job is doling out the punishments. That's my life every day. The kids come in, they got in trouble at recess. I have a code of conduct that we follow. We look at it, and what escalates up the levels is repeat offenders. Okay, so here's your first warning. Here's what you get at this level. Now, one of the differences between the Orpik hit and the Letang hit was the issue of the lateness. So Letang was only, they said it was a 0.63 or 0.68 versus the Orpik hit, which was like a 0.8. So his was considerably, you know, 2/100ths of a second.
No, but in game time, I mean, that's, right, it's more than enough.
That's huge.
Orpik was an idiot.
It was 2/10ths of a second, 2/100ths, 2/10ths, whatever. I wasn't good at math. So there was that piece, which can add to it. So then at some point, it has to be spelled out clearly. What you can't, like I said, you cannot take into account the amount the person was injured because of everything that you just said, but also because then that encourages people to start taking dives, to start doing things to say, look, I really am injured. I'm going to ham it up. I'm going to hurt myself. Like, to me, like, that opens up the door to, all right, well, you need me to look injured, then I'm going to, you know, embellish it even more. I'm going to do this. Like, it's just not in what? So we're saying, okay, well, in order to get that, you have to practically kill a guy. Like, we don't want the injuries to happen. So you should be putting, but you know what I mean? Like,
no, I can't agree with you.
We don't want the injuries to happen. So give the punishments that are appropriate before those injuries happen.
And I wonder if they're doing enough to actually send a message to the players to knock this ass off. Clearly the NHL does not want these hits to happen, but they're continuing to happen. So the punishment, the ways they're doing it, are clearly not making a difference. It's like you said, we both work with kids, and if I give a punishment to a student or a camper, whatever it may be in the situation, and they go and they do it again, clearly my punishment was not effective. And right. I have to take it to the next level in terms of what their punishment is for their
behavior. And that doesn't mean on the second time. It doesn't mean, okay, you do it once, the second time I'm automatically going to step it up. It's going to be, look, okay, you made the mistake again. What are we going to do about it? And it has to fit what happened. And so, you know, that level.
Sure, every situation is different.
Right. But you have guidelines. So I know exactly how many times things can happen before I step it up. I also know, you know, it's a slightly different thing. So you've been in trouble for hitting before. This time you did something else. It was a slash. It was a hook. It's not going to get you, you know, like there has to be some consistency that people can rely on. And understand, yes, your repeat offenders will get it worse. That's the only thing that makes sense. To me, it makes absolutely no sense to take in the injury for the punishment.
Okay.
Taking in somewhat of intent, like if I pick up my elbow, look, the thing with Letang's hit, his feet left the ice.
That they did.
His feet left
the ice. As did Malkin, and he's fine.
Right, but his feet left the ice and his shoulder lifted. There is no need for your feet to leave the ice nor your shoulder to lift if you are going for a body check.
I mean, it's going to lift as you go through the check because of momentum and things like that. But
not
the principal
that
point
way
of,
his lifted.
No.
Would lift.
But my point is the principal point of contact should not be the way that both Orpik and Letang's hits
right.
And Malkin to some extent shouldn't have been. But Malkin's been getting away with hits throughout the entire series and sliding into the goaltender and no one saying anything about it. Now, I have the perfect way to solve this disciplinary problem. Here's what you do. The NHL should hire a bunch of retired school teachers. They are well equipped to handle.
Retired assistant principals.
Okay.
They're the one who dole out the punishment.
There you go. Okay. Retired assistant principals. Those that are used to giving out punishment to ill-behaved students.
I'm telling
they will
you,
be able
work.
To call the, what'd you say, or employees?
No, I said it would work because.
No, but they're perfectly.
You see it every day. That's all we do.
Yeah. So they are used to talking to people and telling them what they've done wrong. And clearly some of these players, Braden Shen, need to be talked to this way because they're continuing to be douchebags and trying to injure players and thinking it's okay.
But did you notice Braden Shen was really only a douche canoe for the first game? After the first game.
When he was cross-checking Kuznetsov in the side of his knee in game 4?
Yes, but
three?
He was not, yes, that he, then he was a jerk, and I'm not sticking up for him,
no, he
but
was
he was out
series.
Of character game one. Game one, he was on a warpath, and that was, look, Shen.
Well,
is
everyone
not,
is in game one.
That game one, I
you're
told
you're trying
you,
to send a message in the first
game. I told you that game one I thought was all out of control, because it normally doesn't get, and you noticed with that series that instead of that series getting uglier, they actually stopped hitting. They stopped playing because it was stupid penalties. To start the series that way made no sense.
Well, I wasn't surprised at all because it's the Flyers, but that's besides what. No, but my point is the players that are continuing to be D-bags, like Shen, like Ryan White? What the hell was that guy's name?
Yes, Ryan White.
Like, apparently Orpik is occasionally. Like Letang can be at times. Like Steve Downey. Like,
there's plenty of them. We can name
plenty of Cal Clutterbuck and other idiots that are out there running on their mouths and trying to injure or potentially injure players. The NHL is not doing enough to stop them from continuing these problems.
Right.
And so clearly something needs to be done because the connection between the hit and the injury is different. It's inconsistent on every play that happens. And so for them to be like, well, he's injured because his body cannot take as many hits as the other guy who got hit, so you're in more trouble. What? So every player that now has been injured once before needs to have like a little thing on their jersey so they know, oh, don't hit that guy as hard. He might get hurt a little more. It's ridiculous. And it's creating more problems and inconsistency, and teams are getting screwed over. However, with that being said, this team has lost Brooks Orpik for, what, 2 of his 3 games now?
Yeah.
Earlier in the season, he was out for 453 games or something around that number.
Really? I didn't know. There was
so many games. He's been out for the last 7 years. They were playing really freaking well without Orpik. So is his being out now what's hurting this team?
Yeah, because I think you have to remember, playoff hockey is different than normal season hockey.
True, true.
And so we are relying more heavily on players like Orpik. Look,
he's out.
What?
You said Orpik, he's out.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Is so, think about your question. So do we have more impact? Yes, because...
Is Orpik being out hurting this team?
Yes, because we have been relying in the playoffs more heavily on players similar to Orpik and that area.
Okay. Keep going.
And so to have him not there is having more of an impact, especially when your big guns are not rising to the occasion. The part of the thing is you have to have depth throughout the playoffs. You have to have not – which is why it's great when we see people like Beagle scoring and other people that are not like your top line. But when you start having these holes that are – the top of the line, you know, that are the people that you rely on. Yeah, it absolutely has an impact.
But, I mean, they have depth in theory. They have depth on paper.
Yeah, but but they're not producing, so you don't have depth. You have bodies on the ice that are skating around at this point.
Now, do you think it's, all right, so what's changed? Just the level of play? Because
yes.
The Capitals were playing good teams when Orpik was out earlier in the season. I understand it's playoff hockey and things change and teams change the way they play to some extent. But these are still the same guys. They still know how to play together. What is causing them to do these stupid things where they're running into each other or they're making bad plays and having defensive breakdowns because one player didn't know what the other guy was going to do? Is that just because Orpik is out or are they overwhelmed with the pressure?
If I knew the answer to that.
Well, no, not even you know the answer. What do you think the answer is?
I mean, look, everybody know, like, to me, defense wins a, like, championship game.
Yes.
Defense wins playoffs.
Yeah, look at the LA Kings.
Right.
How many
defense
of their Stanley
wins.
Cups are because of Jonathan Quick?
It doesn't matter how many pucks. First of all, defense wins because look at us right now. We can't put a damn puck in the net.
That's true.
And so when you start having your defense falling apart, skating into each other like the Keystone Cops. If you have what?
I said that was pretty bad.
Yeah. If you have that happening, if you have Orpik out, I mean, and then you call up Weber and he's got beautiful assists for the other team. I mean, you start running into problems. There's only so much we can do, especially when we're getting stupid penalties. I will say, and I'm not this type of person normally, but I do say that the refs have not been making the best calls across the board. I mean, there are some blatant penalties that don't get called. And then it's like makeup penalty left and right. And it's like, really? Like,
yeah, they've missed calls
right penalty.
For both teams.
Yeah, a lot of missed calls. But there's also been a lot of stoppages in play. Last night's game had, what, 73 to 80 faceoffs? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, they were saying something at one point. There was like 70 faceoffs. I think late in the third period, and I was like, wow. In my head, I went, well, that's a lot of faceoffs.
It is.
And then I realized I had no idea how many faceoffs you normally have in a game. But that does seem like an exorbitant amount.
It's stressful to watch. I'm sure it's stressful to play if you're a Capital.
Well, I'm sure it's stressful for both teams. But I guess the question is...
I don't care if it's stressful for the Penguins.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Screw you guys.
I'm just going on record as having said prior to this series that I wanted the Rangers.
Oh, everybody I would much rather have played against the Rangers.
Everybody else was saying no, bring on the Penguins. We cannot get past the Penguins.
Okay. Yeah. See, I understand that, and it's like I was saying on the Facebook Live thing last night. As a DC sports fan, I am prone to disarray and depression and getting ready for the collapse because all of our teams seem to find a fantastic way to do that. However, while these organizations are the same, there is nothing similar that truly affects the team from the 90s.
Right.
So from even potentially the early 2000s, I mean, you have a new owner, new GM, new coaches, new players.
Yep, but we still strength and conditioning guy, I'm assuming. You still have the ultimate, first of all, you still have...
Don't say Crosby or Ovechkin because neither one of them don't dick the series.
Okay, but you still have the hangover from every year. Like, it is known.
Hey,
like,
when we beat them in the Winter Classic.
What?
We beat them in the Winter Classic.
Yes, I know. Did you watch the Rival show? They actually had a Rival show, an NHL Rival show about... the Caps versus the Penguins, which was really interesting. And here's the thing. The Pens have beat us and gone on to win the Cup.
Very
the
many
Pens
times.
Have won the Cup. We have not won the Cup.
I don't really want to listen to NBC and their pro-Penguin BS.
Well, that's... Yes. I just...
I mean, it's just Pierre McGuire. I hate that guy.
No, I don't like... Yeah. He I don't sucks. Like... Doc drives me crazy. His voice drives me.
I like him because he gets, anytime anyone scores, he's the most excited person in the arena. It's just, he gets so fired up. I don't know why, but I like it.
Okay, here's how we can cure the problems. If we start crashing the net, if we start getting the rebounds, because Murray is giving rebounds.
Shoot high.
What? And shoot we shoot high. High. Yeah.
But you're 100% correct. Get guys in front of the net. How many rebounds are that where the puck falls down in front of his pads? And I'm like, all right, it's one, two, three. Three Penguins around and no Capitals.
No, and several times you've seen an entirely open net. And they're like, sometimes, like you even talk about, the puck is sitting on the ice. And it's like almost a second before anybody goes to it. And I know a second doesn't seem long, but a second is a long time for the puck to be just sitting there.
When it's sitting right in front of the goaltender, it's
an empty net. When it's an empty net and there's nobody there to get it. I don't, like, that to me... Is hockey 101? Is any sport 101? It's soccer 101. It's any sport that has a goaltender and a goal. You have to pressure the goalie.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing goalie this past Tuesday, and I remember there was one shot that came in, and I kind of tried to catch it, but I dropped it in front of myself. Couldn't have been there for more than half a second or a second, but that was a really long half second or a second where I went, oh, crap, and like dove on the ball to be like, oh, God. And I'm sure it was so fast and no one's going to have it, but it's, you know, had there been a player on the opposing team that was closer to me at the goal, they may have had a chance to put the, I did that in a game myself where somebody took a shot, the goaltender dropped and I happened to be standing there and was like, all right, thanks man. And I just poked it in the net. Somebody do that. Knubel, call them up.
Yep.
Tell, Oshie, I guess, but Chimera, if you're going to put him out there on the power play, put your big butt in front of the net. So that you can screen and get out there. And it's too many times where they're cycling and then someone takes a shot from a bad angle and nothing comes of it because the rebound is either going behind the net or the Penguin or Murray's just catching it because it's right in his freaking pads. Take a shot high, force him to fight it off, which he's not doing very well when you're shooting high. That's how you're going to get their goals. I think that they're going to come out with the desperation to, I mean, hopefully this is not going to be like the series against the Lightning from a number of years ago where they just completely disappeared and got swept in four games. I hope this team comes out with a ton of desperation. My concern though is I don't know if you saw it, but the look on Ovechkin's face after the game, he just looks so defeated. And
he's
so
looked
pissed.
Defeated the entire series. That's what I'm saying.
I don't when think he's looked defeated.
When you watch him, if you watch carefully, and maybe
are
I'm
you
just,
implying that I am not paying attention?
No, but watch him because he isn't always the one with the puck. Watch him when he does not have the puck. He's not moving. And he played this way a couple years ago, and it was similar. It's like, look, for there are times when he hustles, when he is the one generating play, like when he's really all over the place, and he's not that he has to play every single position. I get that. But I feel like he's just hanging back, waiting for the passes to come to him instead of like generating chances more so. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I could just be looking to have him do more. I just might want him to be doing more than he is, but I just feel
like. Score 10 goals tomorrow.
No, but hey,
I'll take that.
Score one.
I'll take four.
I'd be happy with him to score one, give Oshie one, give Biggs one. That's what I'm saying. Like, just, I don't want them, we have to stop waiting until we're behind in order to get the adrenaline and in order to get the game going. And that's what I'm saying. Like the nice thing has been literally every game I've been watching, I'm like, well, it's okay. We'll come back in the third. Like in every game.
When the other team is playing shutdown defense.
Right. But in every time we have made a surge in the third. The problem is you can't keep waiting for the third because there's no guarantee you're going to be able to make up as much ground as you have already lost. And that's what we've done. We can't, like, was it game four where in the third we scored two goals, but we were already down at that point 3-0, and then we came back and, like, wasn't that the fourth game?
You mean the last game?
No, it was the one before that.
No, I think it was game three where we were down 3-0. They came back to make it like 3-2.
Thank you. Game three.
It was the Cavs fans are like, oh, we're going to have a chance. Oh, we ran out of time.
No, but look, there were more chances. If they had played
another period,
well, that would have been nice because that would have been the tie. I'm just saying, if they had played earlier in the game, the way that they started playing in that third period, it would have been a different story. No, which is all I've been saying all along.
This is just what I think is going to happen.
So if you want me to solve the problems of the world with the Capitals,
Coach Amanda.
That's how you do it.
There you go. That's our work. we were talking earlier before the show about the other Caps news going on, and we can jump back into the playoffs if you have more that you want to talk about. But Barry Trotz is named a finalist for the Jack Adams, along with Florida's Gerard Gallant and Dallas's Lindy Ruff. Now, this is the award that goes to the head coach who has contributed to the most to his team's success as voted by the members of the NHL Broadcasters Association. Do you think Trotz, and this might sound a little homerish, depending on your answer, do you think Trotz deserves to be a finalist for the Jack Adams?
Yes.
Can you think of anyone else that was not named that should be up there?
Oh,
Mike Sullivan of the Penguins?
No, I won't say that.
But he's taking them from being a crappy team to he's taking them from being a pretty crappy team to being pretty
good. I don't care. You're never going to get me to say that. No.
Tampa, look, maybe because they lost Stamkos.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's my essay. Why I think Barry Trotz should win the Jack Adams by Amanda.
There you go.
Here, if you look back, Bruce Boudreau lost the ear of the players. There was a point where you could see Ovechkin was no longer listening. The team was no longer paying attention, and it just spun out of control, and we were not being productive, and we just dove in the standings. We have struggled. So they got a new coach. Oates. Hunter first. So I couldn't remember if Hunter was first or Oates. Either way, Oates and Hunter. It's like Hall and Oates, but Hunter and Oates. just didn't work. They also did not have they could not get these players to listen and to follow whatever system they have. Now, guaranteed, they didn't have that long. They didn't give them time to get there, but Trotz has basically had the same amount of time as they have. And clearly what he is doing is working because the entire team has turned around. That's not to say we were a horrible team and he hasn't taken us from the bottom of the barrel, but he clearly has the respects of the players. He's clearly working with them to the point where they're feeling better about their game and they're able to play the game that they want to play. But still within his style, still within his system, and they're respecting the system. Maybe not at the moment, but during the season, which is when it counts.
Okay, so does he deserve it more than Gallant in Florida and what they've been able to do with their stupid jerseys and dumb name? Or Dallas with Lindy Ruff.
Yes.
Dallas, who like 2 years ago or 3 years ago was pretty bad.
I think that's a hard say. It depends on what they're really looking for.
See, I feel like because they won the President's Trophy, like that whoever's coaching that team almost deserves at least the nomination just because of it. But I don't know. I mean, that's a tough call for me. If I'm one of the people voting, I mean, Florida's been pretty garbage for a while. And so for them to have been as good as they were this season, I mean, they got knocked out in the playoffs, thankfully, but for them to be as good as they were this season, it's a lot of credit to Gallant. My guess is that Gallant in Florida is going to get it.
You think? But didn't they also have a big turnover of players?
Yeah, so. No, but it wasn't like they brought in every big name. I mean, they brought Yager.
Well, and Yager.
Yarnmere, D-bag Yager.
I'm just saying, so.
I think if Trost gets it, he's well earned.
Trost is also working with a team that hasn't had a lot of turnover. Like, we still have a lot of the staple play. Well, not a lot. I don't know. There is a bunch of people on the team that I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, what? Who? What?
What's going on? I'm not that way anymore, but at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot could get it, but if Trotz gets it, he's definitely earned having that little trophy thing in his house or wherever it is he may put it. In other Caps news, Ovechkin was named a finalist for the Mark Messier Leadership Award, along with the Islanders' John Tavares and Nashville's Shea Weber, the Weber that the Caps should have acquired, presented to, ouch. They could not have afforded him, not a shot at Mark, they couldn't afford his contract.
No.
Presented to the player who exemplifies great leadership qualities to his team on and off the ice during the regular season. Now, you and I were talking about this one before the show. Are you surprised that he was named as a finalist for said award?
So here's the thing. Around the league, I think Ovechkin has a
bad reputation as brought on by Canadian media. Don Cherry.
That's why I paused. I was trying to find the right word.
No, that's my thoughts.
I know, but a tumultuous reputation, if you will. Mm. Because I think that everybody respects him as a player and they own up, like they realize that he is a phenomenal player. But I think that you're right. There are times when they also decide, okay, he gets called dirty. He gets called all those different things when he isn't. He's just an aggressive player. But the thing of it is, as a Caps fan who goes to the games and really watches, and I'm not saying you aren't, but you know,
no,
like
but
somebody,
I'm like way up high in the nosebleeds.
But
and
still,
the clouds,
even watching on TV,
and you're down low.
Okay, even watching on TV, the point is that he celebrates his team more than himself. So anytime a guy gets like a hat trick, he is the first one who goes over and makes sure that they get the puck. If it's their first goal, he gets the puck. He celebrates. He is the first one, as you even said before we started talking on the show, you know, Mike Green had to watch out because he would come barreling.
Didn't he say that
celebrate.
In their first playoff run that after he scored that game-winning goal in one of them, that he tried to get away from Ovechkin because he knew he was going to jump into him and potentially injure him?
So I think that he has a lot of qualities that do make him, truthfully, yes, a good leader. I don't know, like, how much he helps the players, how much he, like, acts as a mentor, because to me that's part of that. But I cannot fault the guy for being a team player. He is not a greedy guy. He is not just me. He is very much about the team. So I do think that that he's deserving of it from what I see.
Okay. I'll go along with that. I'll back that. I also don't really know that much about what Tavares does on or off the ice as well as Shea Weber, but I'm sure that each of the players that were nominated deserve something for what they have been doing. So that's pretty much all of the Cat stuff I have. Do you have anything you'd like to discuss?
No, I think we've covered most of it. I just would really like to win Saturday's game. I know nobody else listening would like that. But I 100% would like to win it.
I'll take three more wins.
Wait, I would like to point out that my Uncle Bob, I have to give a shout out to my Uncle Bob because he's a Boston Bruins fan through and through. But when the Bruins got knocked out or didn't make it.
No, they didn't even make the playoffs.
I know. Shh, I was trying to make it sound like they made it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yes. When the Bruins failed to appear He has decided to jump on the Rock the Red bandwagon, and he has been so positive and so energetic and so loving the hockey that the Caps are playing that we have to do it for my Uncle Bob.
There you go.
Because I want to make sure that we win another fan for life.
Did you hear us, Ovechkin?
See that?
It's got to be
done for Uncle Bob.
You're doing it for Uncle Bob. If you're not going to do it for yourself and the other guys on the team and Holpe and Bax and Oshie.
Do it for Uncle Bob.
You do it for the random guy from Boston who's not really even a fan of your team. Hook him up. Okay. All right. So that is all there is to talk about the depressing state of the Caps. Amanda, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
On this episode. Now let's go. We're going to check in on the farm teams after this quick word or two or many from the Baltimore Sports Report Network.
What the fuck?
What the fuck
is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network.
Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
All right, we are down on the farm. We'll start in Hershey, where in the past week, the Bears won their series over Portland 3-2 and began the Eastern Conference semifinals against Wilkes-Barre Scranton, unfortunately losing game one on Wednesday by a score of 4-0. That's got to hurt a little bit. The Bears will try to get back into the series on Friday at the Giant Center, then go on the road for games 3 on Saturday and game 4 on Monday, then go back home for what will be hopefully be a necessary game 5 on Wednesday. Down in South Carolina, the Stingrays started their series last Friday against Adirondack, where they are currently down 2-1. Game 4 is, as we speak, on the road, where South Carolina is up 5-0 in the second period. With Game 5 on Saturday on the road and a hopefully necessary Game 6 on Tuesday and 7 on Wednesday, both at the North Charleston Coliseum. That's what's going on down on the farm. Now let's go around the NHL. All right, let's go around the NHL, where in one of the most obvious things to happen regarding the NHL since the last lockout, Toronto was awarded slash given the rights to pick first in the upcoming NHL draft. Everyone saw that coming. In other news, Florida signed forward an old man, Jaromir Jagr, to a one-year extension. Arizona announced that they have signed John Schaefer as their new general manager, and he has only been able to rent a car for a year. The 26-year-old will be the one to attempt to rebuild the Coyotes franchise. Former Ducks and Caps head coach Bruce Boudreau will be interviewing for the Senators head coaching vacancy, as well as will be chatting with the Minnesota Wild. And he may be calling for another one as Calgary fired head coach Bob Hartley, who went 134, 135, and 25 in 4 seasons in Alberta, coaching them to the playoffs just one time. That's the news from the past week in the NHL, and that's pretty much the end of the show. I want to thank everyone out there for listening, streaming, downloading, however it is you listen. And also thanks you to Amanda for joining me on this brandedless version of the show. If you want more information about What the Puck, head on over to whatthepuckcaps.brandocash.com. You can like the Facebook page at facebook.com/WTP podcast. There's 2 P's in that title. And you can see all of our Facebook live instant game reactions, recaps, whatever they're supposed to be called. Or you can follow the show on Twitter at WTP_podcast. You can find me rambling on about the Caps, Arsenal, DC United, the Redskins, and what other assortment of other sports that I feel like talking about at WTP Coaching on Twitter. And you can find Brandon at Brando Cash. Now, as a Caps fan, I'm assuming that you're listening to this show. You would definitely like to check out CapitalsOutsider.com. This is a great fan website devoted to the Washington Capitals with great articles about the team as well as the history of their bobbleheads. So yeah, that's it. That is pretty much the show. Brandon and I will return next week, hopefully with more games to talk about and not a very disappointing, depressing recap of the season. All right, guys, no more dicking around. I'm tired of this shooting low, shots from the outside, shots from the corner, shots from along the boards, bad angle nonsense. All right, power play wakes up, start scoring some goals, shoot high on Murray, make life difficult for him, get in his face, keep the season going. We, the fans, are not ready for the season to be over yet. You damn sure shouldn't be either. It's time to wake up, play some smart hockey, get back to the way you were, keep the season going. I know you're not done yet. We don't want you to be done yet, so let's keep it going. No more screwing around. All right, that's the end of the show. As Brandon likes to say, let's go Cavs.
This has been a production of the Brando Cash Network. Music mixed and produced by DJ Wolfman.